It's 2039, and the global enterprise Close Encounters is cloning long-dead authors and touring them around the world to satisfy our voracious appetite for author celebrity. Meg, an ambitious Gen Alpha, has landed herself the plum job of managing Emily Bronte's appearance at the Sydney Writers' Festival. Luke comes out to the balcony with a bowl of reheated stir-fry and a glass of white wine for Meg. The cool change has arrived and the wind is picking up. The branches of the plane tree below them in Botany Road scratch against the glass balustrade of their apartment. So, what's she like? Meg takes a gulp of wine. I told you she was asleep. I only got a glimpse of her before they shut the door. She was sedated then.
For the flight? Yes, of course she was. Have you got a problem with that?
He blinks. She clenches her jaw. She mustn't snap at Luke. He's been holding the fort for weeks now and he's been very patient. But deep down, Meg suspects that he's not entirely on side. She hasn't forgotten his tepid reaction when she told him about the job, or the dinner at Abby and Jack's the following night, when on the pretext of being proud of her, he'd hung her out to dry. It was a nightmare, that dinner. Everyone was on at her about the ethics of the thing. Abby, Izzy, Jack and that poisonous cousin of his. Come on, Meg, are they human or not? If they're clones, that means they're human. You can't have it both ways. You can't be telling people this really is Emily Bronte while denying her human rights. It's all bullshit, said the rude cousin, his mouth full of crusty bread. It's just like identical twins, isn't it? She's not actually the same person. Except she has her memories. Abby looked sharply at Meg. That's right, isn't it? She thinks her thoughts. Isn't that the case? That's just simple AI, sneered the cousin. Like those pet clones they do in China. No, Abby's right, Meg said. She does have Emily's memories, or some of them. It's connectome genetics. They have a fingerprint of the molecular connections in the brain and... Meg had stumbled through her patter that night. The material was still new to her, and her garbled explanation of the literone's fractured consciousness fell distinctly flat with the guests around the table. She ploughed on, nonetheless, explaining that they laid down no short-term memories, so no matter how stressed or upset they might appear in the moment, there was no residual harm. What thoughts they had were of the past, of their original lives and selves, and they came in fragments. She drew on the analogy used by Close Encounters that their consciousness was like the reflection in an old mirror where the backing foil was peeling away in places. They came in and out, responding to certain triggers, sometimes lucid, sometimes miffed, as if hearing voices in their heads.
Creepy, muttered someone at the other end of the table.
Creepy, yes, I think so too. Abby folded her arms. Meg, I can't believe you accepted this gig. I have to say, I'm very disappointed.
And that was when Luke blundered in on the issue of Meg's career. It was an amazing opportunity for her. She'd be crazy to turn it down. It was going to open doors for her at festivals and literary events all over the world. These were Meg's own words, of course. She'd said all this to Luke, and more, arriving home the night before with a bottle of Bollinger. She'd danced around the lounge room, fizzing with joy, while he stood back, bottle in hand, like a bemused waiter. 4 years of hard slog, and she'd finally broken through, been given the big gig, the biggest, her chance to shine. No more free festival sessions for her. Those stocking filler events, panels discussing creating strong female characters. They'd given her Emily Bronte. Fuck! The literary event of the year, of the decade, the century. They'd given it to her. And Rosalie Spencer. Oh, my God, the look on her face when Vronnie told the team. She tried to make out she never wanted it, but of course she fucking did. All of them did. Rosalie, Seb, Lena, they all had their names in the hat. And all of a sudden, there they were. Up on the moral high ground. Yes, Meg had said all these things to Luke, but spoken to this boho crowd in the middle of Marrickville, the very same words sounded harsh and ruthlessly ambitious. She had laid into Luke on the way home that night. She thought he'd let her down. How could he be so obtuse and fail to read the room? Poor Luke. He was often wrong-footed among her friends, knowing almost nothing about books and publishing. He worked in the city, in finance, and while he claimed to have read Wuthering Heights at school, she suspected his knowledge went no further than the lyrics of the old Kate Bush song. Fucking Kate Bush, she was another one. Meg looks down at the wet street, at the people making their way to bars and late-night cafes. She'd applied to the rights for that song, to have it playing as the audience came into the auditorium. Over her dead body, Kate Bush had replied via her London agent, adding some caustic request that when the time came, would they be so kind as to leave her dead body alone? Meg had had plenty of knockbacks over the past 8 months, but that one really stung, because her grandmother had loved Kate Bush and had taken Meg as a child to dance to Wuthering Heights in a long red dress on a sports field in North Sydney. The beef has gone tough in the microwave. Meg sets the bowl aside. She drains her glass and goes to the fridge for a refill. Luke comes out to say goodnight and eyes the bottle of wine. What? She snaps. Nothing. Don't stay up too long.